You're listening to the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Hello, friends. You're listening to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, and this is WCNO 89.9 FM. And we're on the show every Wednesday from 4 to 5. So tune in, and I do my best to teach you, give you insight and information, anything around financial planning and retirement planning, or whether you are saving up for retirement or you're already retired. We really just want to give you as much knowledge as I possibly can to equip you and help you make good choices for yourself. And then obviously offer my services. I am a independent fiduciary financial advisor here, and I'm also an insurance agent. So we are Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance. And you can find us online, mindymolina.com. It's Mindy with an IE. It's also a live show, so feel free to call in at any time if you have any questions. And or want to share some thoughts or stories. I always love to hear from my listeners. Otherwise, I just chat away and try to give you as much information in an hour that I possibly can. So today we're going to be talking about IRAs and this idea of conversion. So often I have people come to me and they have saved up all of this money in an IRA. Like they say, retirement rich. They save up all this money in their 401ks, in their 403bs, 457s. You know, you're contributing all those years while you're working. And the good news is that none of that money that you put in there, you did not pay income tax on. And so to get to the end, when you start realizing, wait, what am I going to do now? The truth is, you know, Uncle Sam is coming to collect. He is going to get paid on that money at some point. You're not contributing to never pay taxes. You're deferring, which means putting it off for later. So what do we do about later? What are some ways, what are all the different strategies that people use to kind of deal with the taxes? To say there's a way to just get out of it, no, I haven't found a way. If you have, please call me, call the show today and give us a way to get out of those taxes. But there's certainly ways to manage it. And then especially to your heirs, you know, a lot of times you save this money, but you don't end up using it all in retirement. But then you pass this tax burden off to your children and they don't really get all of the money because they have to pay, they receive it as ordinary income. And typically children are still in their working years. And what's that mean? That means they're already in a higher tax bracket and then they inherit this money and now it gets taxed at the highest tax bracket. So the whole point of a conversion, as we go through these different topics and strategies, the whole point of it is to say, look, I owe income tax on this money. I need to pay it at the lowest tax rate possible, okay? We know we're going to have to pay, but how can we pay it at the lowest tax rate possible? And that's where converting the money comes in. And what they mean by converting is basically taking it from pre-tax dollars, money that you haven't paid your taxes on yet, to money that you have paid taxes on. So just moving it from one bucket to the other at the lowest rate possible. That's the ultimate strategy. So let's dive into a few topics, and I'm going to touch on a lot of things, and there's layers and layers here, so we're not going to cover it all in an hour, but we are going to touch on some stuff, and I'll probably continue next week. So the first thing is the Roth IRA conversion. People come in, should I do a Roth conversion? That's kind of the short, and that's where you convert your traditional IRA, or maybe your 401k, 457, 403b. So if you have that type of retirement account, when you retire, you roll it over, they all become an IRA. Whether it's labeled as an IRA, a 401k, 403b, 457, these labels are all just saying, I still owe income tax on this money. Now, how you invest that money is irrelevant. You could put it in a CD. You could put it in bonds. You could put it in stocks. You could put it in annuities. But it's still labeled as I still owe income tax on this money by calling it an IRA. But what's a Roth IRA conversion? So the difference between a regular IRA and a Roth IRA, what makes a Roth IRA special, super special, is that a Roth IRA, when you convert and you put the money into a Roth IRA, it is forever tax-free from that point on. So meaning, why tax-free? Well, when you take the money out, let's say you put the money in there and then it doubles. None of that money is, you do not have to pay capital gains tax, and you do not have to pay income tax on that money. So having a Roth IRA is amazing. The problem with it is there's a lot of limitations. You can't just put as much money in as you want in contributions. So there's limitations. However, it is a hot topic. Converting money, your regular IRA to a Roth IRA is a super wise decision. Hi there, this is Mindy Molina again. I know you've been listening to the show, but I was late coming into the studio, so we just plugged in a little clip there about taxes. But I didn't want to miss today because I have a special guest. And I was caught on 95. I'm extremely dressed up. I'm a little overdressed for the radio today. I went to this event that was a pink party in Palm Beach, like end of season, little gala, and I don't know, I was having fun, so I was late getting here. Plus, the traffic from Palm Beach back up to Palm City is not exactly fun. So, but today, I have David Burke here.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
You look great, by the way.
Thanks,
dude. The listeners can't see you, but you look great.
I'm wearing this, like, bright fuchsia pink, almost, like, semi-formal dress, right? With pearls. This has got, like, 1960s Jackie Onassis vibes, you think? Karen's the producer. She's like, yeah, Mindy.
So, you got the thumbs up.
I
co-sign on it, too, for whatever it's worth.
There we go. You got your Trump International.
I do.
We're Palm Beaching today.
We are pretty hard.
In the studio. So the reason I wanted David to come on is because we're coming into election season, and he is running for office, and I want him to share his story and put his name out there to our listeners and tell a little about him. Give him the opportunity to tell a little bit about himself, because this is really important. First of all, voting is so important, right? And I always am trying to find the right people. Who can you trust? Who can you count on to make the right choices in office? And there's so much, I don't know, like negative news. There's so many stories, whether they're true or not. It's like people are trying to find truth. And I've met you several times, and wife, your family, it's beautiful. And I just wanted the people, my listeners specifically, to get to hear from you today. So I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about you. You're a young guy.
Yes, yes.
And you're going into politics. Tell me your story. Tell me how you came to this decision.
Yeah, so, excuse me. So my background is... As a teenager, I was never really into politics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what teenager really is, truthfully?
True.
You know, I joined the Marine Corps when I was 18 years old here in West Palm Beach. I grew up here. I mean, went to public school all throughout, you know, if your listeners know, like, you know, elementary, the Seminole Trails, Bear Lakes Middle, Palm Beach Lakes High, like that was my local, very, very local, grew up in the community here. And I joined the Marine Corps at 18. You know, my buddy and I joined together. We were like, hey, what are we going to do after high school? We were doing volunteer hours. We were kind of tracking those and said, what if we, you know, let's look at the military. So we go shop around, you know, the Marines were like tight, you know, like their uniforms were just perfectly clean pressed. These guys were in fantastic shape. And, you know, I spoke with the Army, and no disrespect to the, you know, any of your, you know, soldiers that are on the, you know, that are listening and just in general. But, you know, the guy just didn't, you know, their pitch wasn't as strong. They're like, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. But the Marines were like, hey, we're not going to give you any of that S. We're going to, you know, you'll earn the title of Marine. And then maybe you can get something if you bring two other people. And I'm like, well, this sounds like a pretty cool gun club to join. So I join, and, you know, I did my 5 years. I was a military police officer. Always wanted to be a cop, right? That was like, oh, okay. That was kind of like the career field that spoke to me growing up.
Protection.
Right. Service. It resonated with me ever since I was a little kid. I always, you know, I had the G.I. Joes and mm-hmm. I would watch Cops and, you know, I always just was kind of drawn to that. And then, you know, I got out of the Marine Corps like 2013, pretty much went right into the police academy. Got hired by the city of West Palm Beach Police Department. I worked there for about 6 years. I was road patrol. I did like street level enforcement. So, you know, I was the guy in the big black SUV that was looking for bad guys. I was a gang detective. We stood that unit up, me and my partner. And, you know, there was a very, you could feel during my time where the emphasis in law enforcement was going. And it was subtly shifting more and more towards almost a soft on crime approach culturally. It wasn't in the policy so much. The policy, you know, kind of pointed in that direction.
So are you talking about like defunding the police, like that era?
It was the early stages of defund the police. So okay. If you can remember, Michael Brown in 2014 kind of started that trend where the media takes and hijacks incomplete information to spin a narrative that is inherently anti-law enforcement.
Right.
It wasn't bad, right? But there was a bit of a tinge. And then as you keep going further along and you realize that there was a de-emphasis that was placed on going and catching bad guys at the, you know, at the department, kind of in the county, all the way from the state attorney's office down to the administration at the time. And then broader and more, you know, in the broader culture, law enforcement was getting continually dragged
behind the curtain. Because when I think, you know, law enforcement, as long as we have cops, then we have protection. But you're saying behind the scenes in that organization, there was like a lack of motivation to go and find criminals.
100%. And it exists. I can't comment on every department, right? Because leadership's different. Whether you're an elected official or an appointed official, that's different. But you started to see this weakening, and you almost got in trouble for doing your job. Because when you're dealing with bad guys who don't want to get caught, surprise, surprise, they're going to do whatever they want to do to get away. And it just became so difficult. And, you know, at that time, kind of going forward into it, I said, well, This is just bad. I didn't sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
I signed up to go and catch bad guys. That
right.
was the reason why I did it, and all the units that I was involved in. And it's still like that today from the guys that I speak with. And around 2020, and I think this was really something that was eye opening for me. We were on a you know, the summer of love. BLM riots,
right.
You know, West Palm had its own little flare up,
uh-huh.
not as organized as some of the larger cities. So you didn't have the like staged bricks and the Molotov cocktails and the communication, the command and control element that you see in some of these more organized organized protests. And it dawned on me that there was a supervisor who had been there since the day. And mind you, we were in the middle of Palm Beach Lakes in Congress. Cars were everywhere, mobs everywhere, trying to break into the Best Buy and the outlets. And, you know, and the supervisor, when they say the thin blue line, it literally is just that.
What's
supervisor.
That? I don't know what that
the
is.
The thin blue line is the American flag with the blue line. And the idea behind it is that there's a thin blue line between order and chaos.
Okay.
And that is law enforcement. And that is the men and women that go out there every single day.
Agreed.
And put life and, you know, life and limb out, you know, at risk. So, you know, the supervisor, she'd been there all day. She goes, you know what? My shift's over. I'm going home. And that was strong. It was saying, hey, we're in the middle of this. I mean, there's maybe a dozen officers, maybe six or seven about that. And we're in the middle of this, hundreds of people. And thank God that, you know, Sheriff Rick Bradshaw mobilized all their assets and, you know, their helicopters and everything that they brought out and dispersed the crowd, because otherwise we would have been, you know, we would have been pretty much, if they wanted to come after us, we would have been overrun. But, you know, at that moment, I saw that there was something structurally changing within the United States, and that these people, whether or not they were looking, or they were, I guess, ideologically driven, or they were opportunists, but you know, something was changing. And I actually sort of, in tandem with that, I actually had an offer, or soon thereafter, to go fundraise and work with Charlie Kirk at Turning Point USA. And that was really my, and to bring it full circle, that was sort of my, I've always interested in politics and conservative ideas, but that was my real entrance into it on the periphery, but also kind of being a part of the broader movement, you know, the pro-freedom, return to American principles movement. And then that's just kind of compounded over time, where I find myself now at a critical juncture in our country, where the days of, you know, being younger and waiting, you know, doing things and then doing it when you're 50 and you're 60, in my belief, we're past that point. My generation, and I'm 36, and my generation and younger is past that point, because we're at culturally in a politically critical time where there are young people out there that are really buying into the idea of socialism. You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and anyone, you know, speaking on, not on behalf of my wife, but, you know, my wife is from Cuba. And when her family members are saying, I don't like what's happening, and other people are saying that are from some of those, you know, communist regimes, say, yeah, I don't like what's happening, you go, wait, these are major red
flags. In our country.
In our country.
Exactly.
In our country, where the size of government continues to grow, our rights are continued to be diminished, and there's the idea that our rights come from God and not government is steadily being supplanted with, whether it's bureaucrats and or elected officials kind of within the DC beltway saying, yeah, no, this is, you know, we're the arbiters of your rights. No, your job is to protect our natural rights. Your job is not to, you do not endow them. You do not create them. You protect them.
Yes.
That's it. That it's just a full stop statement after that. And you don't even need to qualify it any further than that.
So go back to your engagement with Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
It's strange you said that, because we were here, or it was here that I found out that he had been shot, and watched the video. I came in to do this show, and it was just, what a loss, you know, such a loss. You remind me of him in a lot of ways. I'm sure you get that
humbled,
a lot.
But yes. fall short of him for sure.
Yeah, he was special for sure. Very, very special. But tell me about that. Like, you mentioned being at TPUSA.
Yes.
Okay.
So I did their fundraising here in the state of Florida, right? South Florida specifically. So my job was to engage, to basically spread the word of Turning Point USA, whether it was speaking at clubs, meeting people where they're at, interactions with donors, because, you know, that was the lifeblood of the organization and keeping it going, and being an effective messenger for it, to say, this is why it's so important when Turning Point USA goes out on the college campuses and university campuses and areas that conservative ideas were basically forbidden for two decades plus, right? Yeah. Conservatives, they ceded that ground. They said, we're not gonna fight that fight. They're going to get into the real world, and then they're going to become conservative by proxy. But we... that's not the case at all. I think I read a stat in 1992, 8 out of the top 10 Fortune 500 CEOs identified as Republican, and that paradigm had then shifted in the most recent, citing that study, I think it was only, or 8 and 10 were then Democrats, right? So whether or not they're true believers of the ideology, or whether they're just, they do it out of convenience because it's culturally appropriate, or you're not going to ruffle any feathers by being a Democrat, whatever the case may be, that still speaks to a broader issue if you have to conceal your political ideology,
mm-hmm.
right? And which I believe that these ideologies and these ideas are rooted in what, in the conservative sense, what made America the best country in the history of Earth. So to run away from those ideas it's concerning. But
yes.
No, Charlie was, I mean, the man was a genius, full stop. If he wasn't doing what he was doing for the movement, he would have been in Silicon Valley building, you know, a tech product. But he was a true believer.
Yes.
And the man could not be corrupted.
Yes.
He was just true as the day is long. I mean, I it was amazing to kind of be around that level of knowledge
and intellect
and intellect and recall. I mean, his ability to kind of tie in, you know, two disparate ideas, bring them together and show why those two coalesce.
Yes. And one of the things that I followed Charlie for a long time, and I have two sons. I told you, so 12 and 9 now. And I told them, I sat my one son down. I said, I want you to follow Charlie Kirk. And because he's the only person I ever did that with my children. But I'm like, this is the man I want you to learn from, right? And they were devastated.
Yeah.
Obviously, because they're just like, what? And then so many people witnessed what we saw. It's such a setback, but he was brilliant, very brilliant. And one of the things that saddens me is now, it's like, there was this explosion of Charlie. So many people were watching his content, trying to figure out who he was, right? What was the big deal? Those who hadn't already been exposed to him, and which was beautiful and huge and just such an awakening. And then you just see the devil come in and want to stamp out that fire, right? I mean, we are seeing it. It's
in real time.
In real time. And what a time we are in. Your generation,
yeah.
My generation, our children's generation. You have a son.
100, yeah.
2. He'll be 1 soon. How old is he? 7, 8 months, 9 months?
He turns 1 next Wednesday.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's
crazy.
Fast. Aw.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's what it's about. And that's what, it's a motivation for me that, okay, I'm doing my thing, but my boys got a way to go. They got a long way to go, and they're really going to be impacted by that. And my children are 25% Cuban. So their grandfather fled Cuba. He came over, him and his brother, at like 9 and 11 years old through the Peter Pan program. Mm-hmm. And Fidel Castro's soldiers came in and said, this farm belongs to us. This ranch belongs to us. We'll be back for the boys. But they were able to get them out. But they didn't see that was it. Could you imagine someone just coming and taking your child? So what these going... Piggybacking on what you said, what these families have witnessed and experienced, and then to say, whoa, we're sensing that here in the United States scares me. But I have secondhand, close family members that went through it.
Right.
And a lot of people in our country don't. They don't know really anything. They've never even left the country, never even visited a third world country. They don't know what it's like to have no hope and what it means to not dream. But to know that this porch is all you get, it's all you're ever going to get. So there's no hope. And we have so much hope here, and we have to fight for that. We have to fight for the ability to dream in our country. And which makes politics important, because I, like you, had no interest in politics for years and avoided it, right? It's like you don't talk about that.
Well, politics used to be, you know, you'd turn on C-SPAN and there was arguing on the margin about... You know, just arguing about tax, you know, tax policy. Mm-hmm. But the underlying issue with that is you had, you know, kind of the neoliberal and the neoconservatives. They were all kind of doing the same thing, right? There wasn't that hard break towards an America First perspective, right? It was just kind of like, well, we'll dip our fingers kind of all around the globe. When the USSR fell, we will... You know, we won't cash in on a peace dividend, but we'll do the Gulf War, and then we'll go to Somalia and then Kosovo. And, you know, we kind of squandered an opportunity to reinvest. Our infrastructure's failing. Our education system's failing. The quote unquote free market is continuing to be bogged down by more red tape and more bureaucracy. The tax code, it is tax day, unfortunately, for everyone. Can go long form on that, but look how long the tax code is, right? And who is it? It was Lenin or Trotsky said, and this is the concerning part. He says, "You show me the man, and I'll show you the crime." And as more laws are put on the books, realize these laws are never sunset, and they're always in existence. And last I recall, it's illegal in the state of Florida to own a milk carton, right? It's a second degree misdemeanor. Like, you could go to jail for possessing a milk carton for a law that hasn't been sunsetted since I don't even know when that was that relevant. But right. but that's the issue. And as government grows, as incentives become more focused and I guess you could say circular within D.C., that anytime you have any, you know, kind of like a popular uprising, like what they did to the, you know, the president back in 2016, that doesn't come from the Beltway, they're going to employ lawfare. And they're going to look at any obscure law on the books
yes.
to scuttle.
To hold against you.
To hold against you and to scuttle whatever uprising, you know, peaceful uprising. They're just saying, hey, we want our voices heard. So, okay, well, now IRS is going to slap you with something. And then it's just going to be this continual path.
So let me interrupt you for a second because some people might just be tuning in. But you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show and we're here with David Burke. Can you say it like that?
Yeah, Burke. Candidate for U.S. House District 22, Republican candidate.
That's what I was going to say. Thank you. He's telling us, well, we're just discussing,
yeah.
but I really wanted to introduce him to my listeners. And so that district, what does that include, just so they know?
So it includes the north end of Palm Beach, south to Manalapan. Then it shoots west to cover West Del Rey, West Boca, West Boynton, up to Wellington, and then it shoots back east and pretty much encapsulates the majority of central and southern Palm Beach County.
Who are you running against? Tell us a little bit about that. Like, what is going on in this race?
Yeah, so right now we're going through the primary. There are several competitors in the primary that we have to clear, and then the incumbent is Lois Frankel. In all respect, or rather, you know, however you want to frame it, you know, 78 years old, right? Career politician, fundamentally representative of what's wrong in the political system, whether you want to talk about term limits, whether you want to talk about insider trading, she's emblematic of all of that. Is her legislation truly representing the constituents of the county and more of the district and more broadly of the country? Because once you're in a position for so long, you become an institution yourself. And as an institution, you seek to perpetuate your own interests.
Yes.
No longer the interests of the people that you seek to represent or that you may represent.
Yeah. Less accountability because you've been there for so long.
It starts to fade.
You start to believe this is your seat no matter what.
Your why goes away.
Mm-hmm.
However rooted that why was, it goes away. And you're just like, okay, I'm up here. I know what I can do. I know what I can get away with. I know how to do this, that, and the third. And that's when you have that institutional rot that I believe exists, that I think most people believe exists, with lowest levels of trust in Congress, low levels of trust within, like say, for example, the FBI as an institution, not the men and women on the front line. But when things become political, once you reach a certain level, it happens in the military, it happens in almost every institution, every
yeah.
job, company.
Well, I've always believed, and I just had a conversation with a friend of mine, I won't say who, but who was connected through the FBI side of it. And we were having this conversation, and I was saying, in my industry, as a fiduciary financial advisor, but if you can apply this to any area, but, you know, people have their career, and how they get paid influences their decision making.
Right.
Right. So how they are going to earn money, how are they going to get promoted? How do they get the glory or the award? Okay. That's the incentive. And when a person is being incentivized, and even myself, I get paid to be an advisor. There's no shame in getting paid.
Got to earn a living.
However, when the way that you get paid becomes a conflict ethically, on what doing right is going to, when making a good decision starts to cause you to lose money,
mm-hmm.
it becomes a conflict. And in our government, it's no different. When people are trying, and I'm sure you've seen this in the positions that you've held as a police officer and investigator, all of these different things, but it's like, I need to be the one to make this, or get credit for this versus
yes,
that
yes.
person. And as a government, we, you know, I would like to assume we're all on the same team. There should never be any internal competition. That internal competition starts to dilute the focus of what we're trying to accomplish here as a country.
100%.
Instead, you have people on the inside working against each other because the incentive isn't there. Everyone should. It's a individual incentive versus a group country incentive. So,
well, that's when people, if you, any of your listeners are always like, you know, if they've ever had the thought come up in their mind, they say, "Well, we have the majority. Why aren't we getting things done?" Well, that's exactly why. It's egos and it's individuals and should be pulling in the same direction. But no one, you know, there's bills that need, it's all sorts of wheeling and dealing that needs to go on. And that's why, you know, when any political party is in the minority, their jobs are so much easier because all they need to do is just go on the media, onto the media and complain. And then they say, oh, this president, this senator, and they just rail against the party in power. But meanwhile, the party in power has all of these competing interests internally that are primarily, you could say, either ego-driven or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the case is.
Well, it's something as simple as getting the bad guys. Like,
yes.
Wouldn't you think that that's kind of a
common...
Like, we want to get the bad guy, but then there becomes an internal conflict of who's going to get it, well, this or that, and then you lose.
Who's going to get, yeah, exactly. Like, oh,
you're losing time.
I did the, you know, I did the initial investigation, or I was investigating that guy first. So, you know, I'm going to hold this information hostage, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, it's going to be like privileged information, and then I'm going to sit on it so I can write the warrant, and then I can get the glory because I got the guy with all
but
the guns.
But meanwhile, people are suffering.
Yeah, but people
on the outside.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying about the incentives. It's like, but I don't know in my lifetime that there's a way to clean that up. But I think there's, you know, a problem in that when you have all of these layers. And like you said, it's like you're building on top instead of tearing away. Like if you're going to build a new house where an old house exists, you demolish the house and then you build a new house. But we don't do that with laws and government.
No.
Seems like we just keep stacking
just
on top.
Stacking on top. You know, I think what would be needed, what's sorely needed, is term limits. Term limits will completely change the paradigm.
Everything.
Of these self-serving institutions.
Do you think it's possible that that could come, that that could happen?
I'm going to try. I'm going to get on my soapbox and I'm going to continue to drive the point home until every American is sick of seeing 30-year representatives.
Yes.
People who are becoming institutions, getting money out of politics too. Citizens United.
Big money.
Big money out of 501c4s.
Now, I will also say that, you know, I also believe that our political leaders should make more money. I don't think they're paid enough. I think if you, for example, if I hire a CEO, if you're going to be a CEO or a upper management, because that's what you are to me when you're running my state,
that's
running my nation.
What you become.
You're building the future for my kids. Like, it's a kind of important. And I don't want my... I'm all about term limits, though, but I think while you're there and you're doing that, and it would attract more intelligent, more,
right,
you know, equipped individuals, because it's a sacrifice. It's almost a sacrifice.
It's a huge sacrifice.
You, a young man
huge.
Like you, with a young family, with a huge opportunity, you could go. There's so many things that you could do that would pay you a higher salary, is there not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just even dedicating the time away from my
all
business.
Coming here today.
It's all an opportunity cost, right?
I mean,
it's you're saying yes to one thing, you're saying no to another.
The last thing that I want a political leader to be thinking about is their finances. They need to be making enough money that it benefits them and their families, because you have to move. You have to, you know, go here,
you
go there.
Uproot.
It's a lot, and they're not paid enough.
And it should be incentive-based, too.
Of accomplishments?
Either accomplishments. I would say that I think this Congress has been the least active Congress in a long time, which I think, by the way, is great. Because what is Congress doing? Congress, by and large, is enacting more legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a way, you know, we don't need more laws. We need less laws. We need laws to deregulate as much as we can. If they're going to shut the government down, you don't get pay. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's your job. If you're going to you know, hold certain departments hostage because of a political motivation, and TSA workers are going off without pay, you don't get paid either. I think that, you know.
Or fired.
Yeah, or you get fired. Or,
I mean, my clients would fire me if I didn't show up.
I think I saw Warren Buffett had a comment on it, and Warren Buffett said, if the, you know, the deficit is above 0%, Congress doesn't get paid.
Or everyone's fired.
It's a great, exactly. But we do, you know, so when you kind of your average, when you're having the conversation with the average person, maybe they're not politically aligned or they don't really know, boiling it down to deficit spending is the reason why your dollar doesn't go as far as it does. And the reason why we've seen, you know, inflation run so hot is because there's too many dollars chasing too few goods. It's so many dollars in circulation, and entitlement spending is a major driver of that. You know, I don't recall what the deficit is most recently. I know we're in the budgets are, everything's in the trillions.
Yes.
And
what about fraud?
Oh, they say $500 billion to $1 trillion. Probably conservative. That's probably a conservative number, because you have to think in the context of the federal government, $10 million is nothing.
Yeah, and this is where I go circle back to my first comment at the beginning of the show is about trust. I feel like the more and more that comes out, and especially your younger generations, we're trusting less and less and less about this, any political, you know, leader. And
yeah,
now you're entering
true.
This.
And I'm in it, and I get it too.
And you're getting into it. Yeah.
I get it. And I can respect that. I say, well, I don't know. You know, I say, that's fine. No, I appreciate the skepticism. A healthy amount of skepticism, learn more about me. A healthy amount of skepticism is healthy, because you shouldn't trust the government full sail in anything, because the government it's run by people, and people are imperfect, mm-hmm. right? And we've seen that obviously most recently with Eric Swalwell, with this big controversy that's coming down, and there were representatives. They knew what was going on. They knew what was going on, and if they're saying anything to the contrary, they're lying.
Mm-hmm. With the guy that ran against Governor DeSantis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine that?
No, it's just, it is. It's hard to imagine that this is, but again, who are we attracting to be politicians?
Right.
Even law enforcement. Who wants that job? Who wants to be a teacher? The people that we are, that are in charge, that are leading us, that are protecting us, that are teaching the next generation, who are creating the environment for the next generations, who wants that position? And I think that's so sad. Because we're not constructing something that is attractive to our top people. So when I see someone like you running for office, who is vibrant and highly intelligent and motivated, and who has a lot to offer, it's encouraging. Because there's not that many people that
Thank
want
you.
That job.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
Thank you for doing it. Because I know it's a huge sacrifice.
What drives me is the why, and not forgetting the why. And, you know, like Charlie Kirk was effectively killed for what he believed in, right? And that shows you the stakes. And let's take it back to 2018, you know, with Ron DeSantis and Andrew Gillum. Mm-hmm. People have a short memory, but we were razor thin to having Andrew Gillum as governor. And if we had him as a governor, Florida would have been locked down.
Oh, yeah.
We would have been in a perpetual state of lockdown. And good, bad, or indifferent, whatever people feel about the growth of Florida, it would have been a complete 180.
Yes.
You know, we have so much in reserves that we cannot add anything else into reserves. We are, I don't recall the number off the top of my head, but the governor basically says, like, hey, we have to do something with this money. Like, we can't take anything else in. So much so that we're in the position to eliminate, and this affects at the local level, eliminate property taxes, right?
Right.
So, you know, the type of governance that we've had under Ron DeSantis's leadership, we were so close to having just a draconian California nightmare.
Yes.
And then we would have been sitting here wondering what happened. Well, it's because people they didn't vote, or they forgot to vote, or it wasn't an issue, especially in state and local and municipal elections. Those elections, which are often overlooked, but arguably the most important to your day-to-day, those people have to turn out for those.
Yes.
People have to vote.
Please vote.
You have to vote because for your city council members, town council members, your state house representative, you know, your U.S. House representative, U.S. senator, state senator.
Yeah, so many people will show up to vote in the presidential election,
yes,
but
yes.
not in this election.
Well, because it has the most gravity, you know? I mean, it's mm-hmm.
It's talked about more.
Billions of dollars go into presidential elections. So that's going to consume the bandwidth, the airwaves. Everyone's talking about it, but no one's really talking about your local city council race. But guess what? That council member is going to be the person that approves or disapproves of a zoning variance mm-hmm. that a big multifamily is going to go up next to your neighborhood, and that zoning variance, they want to, you know, put more units on it. So that's your city council members voting on that.
Yes.
And that's going to impact your day to day more so than the presidential election is important as well. But in your day to day, though, that's where the rubber meets the road. And oftentimes
So this caller called in, wants to know when the election is and what district.
So the primary is August 18th, and that's in District 22, primarily in Palm Beach County.
Okay. So they go it's just like you normally would with the presidential election. You go to your local spot where
yes.
you would normally vote.
Yes. You go on the... to find your precinct. That's my other grievance, by the way. Finding your precinct via Palm Beach through Palm Beach County it's more difficult. It's kind of cumbersome. Once you get it, you know you get it. But that's where you find your precinct where you vote, or whether you choose absentee or you choose good, bad, or indifferent mail-in ballots. I encourage you to vote exactly whatever is going to be the best for you. Wherever your highest level of trust is, whether it's day of or whether it's mail-in or whether it's absentee, that's where I recommend you doing that.
But vote. Yes, for sure.
Vote.
So break it down for us. How is this year going to play out? We have the primary.
Yes.
So how does the election, break down the election process for the year?
Yeah, so August 18th, and also... to the listeners, whether you're Democrat, whether you're Republican, wherever you fall on the political spectrum, your greatest choice of candidate is in the primary. So whoever qualifies for the ballot, you have a wide swath to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever you feel aligns with you the most is who is going to go on to represent the party in the general election. So that is where most people overlook it. In Palm Beach County in District 22, only 33, and I'm speaking on the Republican statistics, only 33,000 people vote in the primary, whereas it's in the high six-figure, or not high six-figure, but, you know, that two, I think there's 250,000 registered voters going off of recollection, registered Republicans. So 33,000 people vote in the primary.
Out of 250,000.
Plus or minus, yeah, but it's that muscle memory to say, vote in November, vote in November, vote
right.
in November, vote in November. And we even saw that with House District 87, and maybe your listeners have questions about that, where, President Trump's backyard for the House seat, coming off of John Maples ran a primary in January, and then in March there were the municipal elections, March 10th, and then his race was March 24th. So you had all of these, and this is in March, and most people...
Spring break,
you know, it's the best time of the year in Florida. Not mm-hmm. saying that's a good excuse to not vote, but if you're kind of like
there's a lot of distractions.
A lot of distractions, and it's that muscle memory to not I need to vote in November, vote in November, vote in November. Or they say, I voted for John in January. Why am I voting for him again in March? And then you have to take that time and say, hey, it's segmented out. And the Democratic Party shows up for special elections. They show up. They were able to, and John is a great guy, he's a great candidate. I know John. And they were able to, you know, flip that seat. And I don't
yes.
think that necessarily is a bellwether of what's going to happen in the midterms, but it's more so a wake-up call to Republicans to say, all right, you have to get out there and vote and bring five people that you know.
And to know when to vote.
And to know when to vote. It's
not a one and done.
It's not a one and done. It is not. Because you vote in the primaries in August and then you have to vote again in November. So it's just
twice.
That, yes. So it's that, people think one and done. But that's just, that's it. And elections are becoming more critical. The Boca Raton mayoral race was decided by one vote.
Wow.
One vote.
This is why election fraud is such a big deal.
Yes.
We have to have secure elections.
That is the absolute.
Cheating is way too easy.
It is through mail-in ballots, through absentee ballots. You can't have any perception of impropriety with voting, or else the entire, you want to talk about voter disenfranchising voters. What's disenfranchising voters the most is not passing proof of citizenship to be able to vote in a federal election. That's disenfranchising American citizens.
Amen.
It's just a simple proposition. So to say it's lunacy to say that people are going to lose the right to vote. Well, guess what? Citizen votes are being canceled out in certain states because you can go in and three different times, and wearing, the Inspector Gadget disguise and then vote as a different person.
Yeah.
Or you've got these mass ballot harvest initiatives that go on where people are going in for these elder homes.
Yeah.
And they're just, checking off and saying, oh, this person's voting for whichever party. So you want to talk about voter disenfranchising? That is what's doing it.
I agree. Yes. So, again, this is the Mindy Molina Show. We have David Burke here. B-U-R-C-K-E.
C-K.
No E.
No E.
No E.
David, I'm not the chef.
Yeah. And he is running for office in District 22.
Yes, U.S. House.
U.S. House. And we have to support him. How do you feel about your, competition?
Yeah, look, I mean, they're all sticking their necks out there. I think we're all, we're all in it to win it, obviously. Mm-hmm. We all, I think at least, we all believe the same thing. But right now, sort of as, differentiating, I'd say we need young.
Yes.
We need young. We need outside perspective. We need service first, knowing what service is, knowing what taking an oath on the Constitution or, taking an oath on a Bible to defend the Constitution, knowing what that weight is.
Mm-hmm.
Not just kind of your same run of the mill. This isn't something as a pastime. I'm in my prime years with a one-year-old at home. So my why is that, once again, that existential threat that I feel, and I'm sure everyone else or most other people feel, is to get in why I'm doing it.
So I have two sons, right? One is the older one. He is an incredible leader, super straight, very black and white.
Yes.
And, but he's not, the other one is a protector. Like he checks he's the 9-year-old. He checks all the doors, all the windows is this. He looks over my shoulder to see if we have enough gas. Like that's how his mind works. They both are brilliant and amazing. But I could see, I look at my older son as like he would be a great leader. I tell him, you could be president one day. And he's like, I don't want to be president. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't want anybody shooting at me. He literally said that.
Oof.
And then I have my second son, who is like my G.I. Joe. And I'm sitting here talking to you and I'm thinking, wow, my mindset of what a politician is shifting because people are going into politics to protect us from exactly what you just said, a threat. Like people are rising up because it's about not allowing what could happen. And you saw that firsthand in your career in the military and in law enforcement. And now you've been provoked. I'm seeing it now as we're talking.
Yes.
I'm witnessing that and I'm saying, wow, this man has been provoked. Into doing this. How do we provoke other people like you to run for office? We need young leadership?
It gets to a point where one just becomes fed up. You get fed up of what's happening. Let's call it, let's say, for example, in DC, where elected representatives could give two craps about what they're there to do, where they sell out our interests to foreign countries. They sell out our interests to DC insiders. They give our Medicare, our Medicaid, and our Social Security benefits away to illegals. Mm-hmm. They just don't care. And those are the people that are running the show. And if that doesn't, if that's not enough, if you need, everyone has their red line in the sand, whether it's, you know, men and women's sports, whether it's sex change for minors, everyone has their red line in the sand. You just have to find your red line in the sand. And there is a revolution that's occurring in our country. And it's not happening through guns and knives. It's happening through indoctrination. It's happening, then that indoctrination has made it all the way up to the legislative level. It's made it into the judiciary with activist judges. It's made its way to, at one point, the potential president of the United States. So you just have to find your why, and you have to find your way of mobilizing, whether it's volunteering, whether it is donating, whether it is, organizing. Find your skill, find your strong suit, find your where your skills align. If you have a lot of time, leverage it. If you have a lot of resources, leverage it. If you have space, host a candidate forum.
Like me.
Exactly. If you have, we all have resources and we all have skills and gifts that God has given us to effectuate change for the better. And however that looks and manifests in your life, lean into that. But find your red line in the sand. The fact that we are founded primarily on, you know, a biblical worldview that has now been thrown to the wayside and, you know, in being replaced with a secular government that's hostile to Christianity.
Right.
Find what's going to get you motivated where you say, I'm not doing this.
Yes.
I'm not going to complain and shout into the void. I'm going to be constructive with my energy.
Well, I look at it as one day we're all going to stand before the Lord.
Absolutely.
And we're going to answer to him. And I want him to say, well done. And I want him to be great, you know, good, say grateful. I'm grateful, but, you know, I want to do my part.
Yes.
But I really, really feel like the war that we're fighting now has become political. And it is running for office, whether it's, a school board. But something is
school board.
Super simple. These positions are so important, and this is where the enemy is attacking us, and it takes men like you, women like me, to stand up and fight for these positions. These are really important positions.
And the left has historically been so good at working these lower-level offices, mm-hmm. these more local offices. They have done that for decades, and because conservatives were out having, however you fall within, let's say, the conservative spectrum, having kids, raising families, working, building businesses, volunteering at the church, and we kind of took our eyes off the prize.
Yes.
And that is shifting. You're seeing more candidates get involved in local races. You're seeing people that, you know, they're kind of coming out of left field and running for national level races. I would consider myself as one of those. It's not like, someone from, the bowels of D.C. put me up to this.
But it's not a one-man job. It's just there's so many positions in the battlefield, and they all have to be filled.
100%.
All of them. And right down to our teachers, even financial advisors. Like, as Christians, we really have to wake up and really look at the way that the strategy is going. Because like you said, it's not guns and knives.
It's not.
It's not that. It's from within. It's a cancer. And the only way to fight it is to to fulfill the position. You can't be lazy. Even going just voting during these elections,
special elections
outside of November. And you're so right about that muscle memory. It's like November. Everything is supposed to happen in November.
That's the rep.
We can't live in that mindset anymore. We have to break out and be really, really intentional about our government from the bottom to the top. Every position.
And I remember when I was working with Turning Point USA, we were rolling out Turning Point Faith. And Charlie saw it and he said, Christians do not participate in the political process as much as we should. We sit on the side. We understand that this is just merely a layover in life. And, you know, we go home to meet our Lord and Savior. And that's okay. And there's faith in that. So, you know, but we still have to live this life every day. And if you don't necessarily want, if one doesn't want to necessarily lean into it, at least do it for your children or your nieces or your nephews or your grand, whoever, however the next generation, however that looks like in your life.
So I just finished my second book, Born to Fight. And everything that you just said is exactly what this book is about, which is this isn't a layover life. There's so many things that we have to fight for while we're here. And that way, when we do get home to heaven, it's not a layover. We're fighting for our family. We're fighting for their future. We're fighting for all the things that matter to our Lord.
Yes.
And this country matters to God. And we can't lose that. And what we're seeing is a lot of evil coming into office in little positions to big positions. And it's up to us to rise and fight. And I'm really proud of you for doing that. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Sharon, David.
I feel
Burke.
Underdressed today, by the way.
I mean, this was a fancy. I didn't tell you you were supposed to come formal. Well, thank you so much. And I'm just going to pray for you quickly. Heavenly Father, please put your holy angels around David and his wife and son. And bless him, Lord. Keep evil from him at all times. And let him do your will, Lord. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for listening. And remember, God loves you, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Ooh, my ears are hot.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com. Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
Ever since the formula bottle, decent, sanitized, everything we knew about our problems. And now we're all roaming the land, saying how did this big lie start? It's time to put our faith in him, 'cause it's gone too far. Oh, I believe he died for me and for everyone. Anything can be achieved when you count on God. Who's gonna take the lead by putting